Accession number 8668, rule number 6.
Jackie Mogridge, Reel 6. After your wings course, you went on to a jet course.
Yes, on meteors.
Could you tell me about that?
Well, yes, I went to a meteor station where they were training pilots for meteors, and the reason for that was to encourage other Royal Air Force pilots who were very nervous of the jets, and they felt that, you know, seeing me doing it so easily would make them feel they wouldn't have to be so scared and put them to shame, really. And that, I think, was the idea of giving me the meteor course to do. And then from that, actually, I ferried a few jets to India for the Air Force.
What did you have to do on the actual course?
Well, I just had an instructor who taught me how to fly. Well, I'd already ferried them before anyway, but, you know, they had to go through the official proceedings. And then what he wanted me to do, really, was to get in and fly the thing round the circuit and come out with all the boys watching so that they think, oh, well, it's not so bad after all, because apparently he was having difficulty sending them solo. They didn't want to go. You know, so, of course, and apparently it did work. It did work. Some of the nervous ones became braver.
Was it more difficult than flying ordinary aircraft?
Much easier than ordinary aircraft. Very much easier than ordinary aircraft. The only thing was you had to get used to thinking a bit faster on the circuit. Your speed was faster.
What sort of speeds were you flying at?
Well, it's only sort of 250. It doesn't sound much, but on the takeoff near the ground, as you're taking off and climbing, and it's quite a lot. And then you have to sort of put your air brakes on to lessen your speed before you could even get your undercarriage down and your flaps down. So that sort of thing you have to know, which is different from an ordinary other type of aeroplane, a propeller-bladed aeroplane. You have to sort of slacken down quite a lot with your air brakes before you can put your other facilities down, like the undercarriage, etc.
Did you have to pass a test to become qualified as a jet pilot?
Well, your wings course did that. When you got your wings, you then went on to the jet course, really. But now, of course, I think you go straight from the... You don't get your wings now till you've finished the jet course.
Now, you wanted to fly the sound barrier as well at this time.
Well, the whole point of me doing the wings course was so that I would be able to go on to the Sabre, which was a Canadian aeroplane, to go through the sound barrier, hoping to be the first woman in the world to do it. But because the Air Force took so long about training me and everything, I only became the second person, well, or the third, because Jackie of America Cochrane did it, and they called us the three Jackies, and it's Jackie Oriel and me and Jackie in America. And I think she did it, but I was told, I don't know whether it's true, but I was told that she just went up with a test pilot and did it with him, you know.
But you flew solo when you did it?
Well, we had to. We don't count it as having done anything unless you're doing it yourself in command of the aircraft. I don't count any of my hours unless I'm in command as hours. Mm-hmm. And another thing I've always done, so otherwise I'd have thousands of hours, is I've always counted airborne to touchdown as my hours. A lot of people count from the moment they start their engines up, which, of course, it takes sometimes quite a long time to get to the takeoff area.
You say the RAF took a long time over training you.
Well, it wasn't that they took a long time over training me. It was just that they were very reluctant to let me do this because the men themselves, the pilots, were objecting. First of all, I was only a volunteer reserve pilot. I think, now I come to think of it, that might have been the objection. Secondly, I was a girl and they weren't all that keen. Why should I have it when they wanted to do it? All the men in the Air Force wanted to do the sound barrier. And it was all very tricky, and I think they were trying to do it without letting everybody know I was doing it. That was really what happened. And it was just unfortunate, as while I was doing the jet course, I went up and did a low, what we call a low level, a fast dive to get as fast as you possibly can in a meteor, which won't go through the sound very obviously, but it does about 590 something, you know, miles per hour, that is, which is not, we count everything by not. And and unfortunately, when after I'd landed, somebody called himself Wing Commander something or other came up to me and said, "What have you been doing?" So I saluted him and said, "I've just been up to do a high speed dive, sir." So he said, "Oh yes, and what speed did you get?" And I said, "About 595, 599. You know, you see, it isn't always what it says on your airspeed indicator. You might only be doing 580 and you add on the pressure from the height and everything, and it's really faster than it looks on the airspeed indicator. You know, make allowances for the atmosphere." And so he said, worked it out, and he said, "Oh yes, well, of course, that's about 600 miles an hour, really." "Oh yes." And, "Oh well, you know." And then he said, "Oh, I want to take a picture of you now." And I've always been a little scared of authority and obeyed all the instructions, terrified they're going to throw me out, knowing how reluctant they ever are to have women in the services. So I never like to break any rules, you know, if I possibly could avoid it. And he took a photograph of me. I had to go back and sit in the meteor, and then I came out, and he said, "Oh, I'll take one of you now with your hat on." And I took that. He took me in that. And then he said, "Right, well then, that'll be all. Don't tell anybody I photographed you, will you?" So I said, "No, I won't." I didn't know why. And then I realized now why. Because in the Air Force, you really have to get proper special permission for everybody to be photographed and publicized. And this was, I think this was on a sort of Saturday, I think. Anyway, the very next Sunday, that morning, I was amazed when everybody rang me up to say, did I know I was a quarter page on size photograph of me in a jet, saying the fastest woman in England, 600 miles an hour, a quarter page size in the Sunday Express paper. I remember being absolutely horrified because I know how fierce the, you know, the RAF are, and I thought, well, you know, it has nothing to do with me, but I hope that I won't get into trouble or anything, because I wasn't sure how it got there, unless this chap who's Wing Commander somebody, Bernard, his name was Wing Commander Bernard. So anyway, I was quite right. I did get into trouble. They tried everything. All the pilots rang up and were furious, and everybody was furious, and I don't know, all sorts of odd things got into the, you know, and I nearly ended up not getting the chance to go to the sound barrier. But then I was lucky, and I was sent up for training for a little while, unofficially. Well, I didn't know the time was unofficial, and I had one of the air marshals behind me now, and he's dead now, but he was the one who seemed determined that I should do it. But I think he had a lot of people who were determined that because I was a woman, I shouldn't be allowed to do this sound barrier. And while this hoo-ha was going on, which was delaying things, Jackie Oriel went to the sound barrier. She was the president's daughter-in-law of France, you know. And the other one was Jacqueline Cochran of America. So, you know, it didn't seem any point really in me doing it, except that I'd got so far. And I just went on quietly and had a go once.
How long did you train for to do this?
Oh, this all went on for quite a while. Went on for months. I'd go and have, say, a couple of hours on a jet, you know. Well, not hours, no, circuits and things on the jet. And then they would call me up and tell me when they wanted me.
What sort of speed did you have to reach in order to break the sound barrier?
Well, that depends entirely on the type of atmospheric pressure and the temperature at the time. And you don't sort of think about the actual speed, you know, 720 or something like that. But it varies depending on, can be as low as 600 and something if it's somewhere in a very hot air atmosphere like the desert, and low level. That's what they used to do when they first did it. They'd go over a desert, very low, and then just go full bore, and they'd hit it much sooner than they would do any other way.
Where were you flying?
Well, I don't know what to say now, because I'm not sure whether it's whether I'm allowed to say, because it was all rather with Somerset anyway.
And what happened after you did fly it?
Well, I was very surprised. I got the Queen's Coronation Medal, and I can't think of any other reason why I should have got it. But, you know, I was told not to say anything to anyone, because it's too...
Did you enjoy doing it?
It embarrasses the Air Force.
Did you enjoy doing it?
Absolutely, but it's a great disappointment, because you don't realise, no sense of speed. It's like sitting in an armchair, very high up, about 30,000 feet. And it's just like sitting in an armchair, you don't, just a little thud, and the Mach number goes up past the zero, and that's it.
What was the aircraft like, the Sabre, to fly?
Well, to me it felt a bit like a Tempest, which was a wartime aeroplane. Very solid and fat. Didn't like it very much. Not as much as, say, a Spitfire or even a Meteor. And it seemed to, when you took off, it seemed to go like a bomb. But then so did the Spitfire, you know, so did the Tempest. So it was that type of aeroplane. The only difference was it didn't have as many gadgets, perhaps, as they did. A jet's much simpler, really.
Why do you say it was an embarrassment to the Air Force?
Well, you see, the men, I suppose you can see their point in a way. First of all, they feel that it costs a lot of money to train a pilot in the Air Force. And then if they have women, they go and have babies. And then usually the end of their career. Because first of all, you've got to be very, very fit and healthy. The fact that I'd already had a child didn't seem to matter, you know. In this case, I mean, it should have proved a point that I was just as healthy, which I was, of course. And secondly, I think they felt that there were lots of men in the Air Force all wanting to go through the sound barrier, and there just weren't enough aeroplanes to go through the sound barrier. Secondly, there wasn't much point in making a fuss, because it was Sabre is built in Canada. It's not built in England. They felt it wasn't, whereas a Hunter, if I could have got a Hunter, which came later, it would have been fine. You see, that at least was built in England, and it would have done, proved something. The men, I think the main objection was that the RAF didn't want to embarrass all the pilots, men pilots, who wanted to themselves to go through the sound barrier. And after all, I was just a volunteer reserve pilot, you know, a women's volunteer reserve, rather than actually in the RAF proper permanently.
Were there other women flying fast aircraft here?
Well, I don't know about fast aircraft. Don't think so. No, I don't think they ever let anyone get a chance, really. You see, there was an awful lot going on behind the scenes that I didn't seem to know about, and I just seemed to be... I was the sort of guinea pig. I think rather like Jean Bird was with the Wings course, you know. She didn't really know what was happening. They just sort of sent her off. And I think it happens to us that way. And I think you get one person who decides that you're going to do it. And I think it was a case of the volunteer reserve people against the Royal Air Force proper. And I think one was sort of trying to get the edge on the other, really. Although they told us when I got my commission that when you're in the volunteer reserve, you're not just in the reserve, you are a qualified Royal Air Force pilot.
And you had your wings by that
and
time.
I had my wings, yes.
Were there any pilots in the Royal Air Force, women pilots?
Yes, there were five of us to start with who were trained to do it. Jean Bird was the first, I was the second, and then there were three others whose names you already know.
And it was soon after this that the volunteer reserve was disbanded.
Well, not for about a year, I think, wasn't it? 1954, because I then went on to do quite a lot with my wings. The Air Force forgot I was in the volunteer reserve and used me for recruiting, flying all over. And I did take some aeroplanes out to India for the Air Force in India, and I wore my uniform, Royal Air Force uniform. It was funny, really, because when I landed in India, I was rushed by, at this, it was Jodhpur, and it was an Indian Air Force station, you know, we'd given them all back to the Indians, and they were more sort of Royal Air Force than we were, the way they, very efficient and everything. And when they saw me land, I had all my medals up then, because the Air Force insisted I wore my war ribbons as well. And so there was I with my war ribbons, and a sort of badge which said, you know, valuable service in the air, and also my coronation medal. So it looked quite impressive, really. Not the medals, but the ribbons I'm talking about. And the Air Force insisted I wore those beneath my wings. But I was still only a flying officer. And when I ferried these aeroplanes in for them, they made quite a fuss of me and everything. And then they said, some of the young men who were there, who were just training to be pilots, said, "Why are you only a flying officer and you've got all those medals?" So I had to explain that I was jolly lucky to be that, because as far as women were concerned, we were told we'd never be any more than that. We could never get any higher in rank than flying officer.
Did you ever get any higher in rank?
Well, no, because they threw us out then, didn't they? That was the year after. But we wouldn't have, I don't think, no.
But they treated you as full RAF when you were ferrying to India?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Well, I suppose we were, really, didn't we?
What was the attitude to you after you had your wings?
You mean from the Air Force?
Yes, the official.
Well, it was... Well, I don't know, really. They seemed very nice to me after that. In fact, some of those very people who sort of wanted to stop me doing anything were the ones who seemed to be the proudest of me. It was so strange. They were really nice. I couldn't believe it. You know, some of the pilots that... we even sneered at the fact that I was going to try and get this and try and do this. They were absolutely charming. I couldn't believe it. And later on, the very CO whose station I was at getting my wings, who sort of, you know, I was terrified of and looked down at me, I was asked to a dinner party, and I was a sort of surprise guest that he was to meet, and he was absolutely delighted, and he was so charming. I couldn't believe it. It was as though, although I'd had this terrible struggle and everyone was determined I shouldn't get anywhere, they now all fated me. It was so odd. Not that I wanted to be fated, you know, I don't find it a bit embarrassing.
But they never mentioned the fact that you'd flown the sound barrier.
Well, no, they never mentioned anything. I mean, I'd no idea why I got a medal for a start. I knew why I got in the Royal, in the ATA, but I was the only one, apparently, I was told, that got a coronation medal, and yet there were five girls who got their wings, so it couldn't have been for that reason. So what else could it have been? I just don't know, you see. Must have been the speed.
And what happened when they disbanded the Volunteer Reserve?
Well, we were just told that we were no longer in the Royal Air Force, but should there be a war or anything like that, at least I was told, I would be called upon to perform my duties.
But that was the end of your RAF flying?
Yes, that was the end of my RAF flying. Well, everybody, I mean, they didn't disband me, they disbanded everybody, men as well. There wasn't even a man's Royal Air Force Reserve. But they kept the Royal Air Force Auxiliary Air Force, which women weren't allowed to. They were squadrons, you see.
And women weren't allowed in?
No. I couldn't never understand that quite. But they were actual squadrons. Volunteer Reserve squadrons. And they flew Meteors and Venoms, same.
Did you try to get in?
Oh, I flew the Venoms to India, really, not the Meteors. I forgot about that. They were single-seater, naval.
Did you try to get into the RAF Auxiliary?
Well, I think we all said we would like to be that, and why couldn't we join? But the Air Force was quite adamant by then. I don't know whether they changed all the air marshals or what. They were quite adamant that no longer would they have any women pilots in the Air Force, because I think mainly because it was the cost of training a pilot was absolutely prohibitive now, and they felt that to a man it's his whole career, and they think to a woman it's just until she gets married, you know. As I say, the fact I was already married and had a child they didn't seem to realise that. So that rather, you know, didn't prove the point that you could still do it, even if you were married and had a child.
But they didn't take any women in?
No, not at all. And they haven't since.
Thank you.
Which means that we've only, that there are only ever in the history of the Air Force would be the five women pilots who passed the wings course so far.